Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show, Tucson's most trusted voice for news and information. I'm Ben Buehler-Garcia, normally the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays at noon right here on KVOI, sitting in for Bill and the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. Listen, if you'd like to interact with us, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Now, it's no news that there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in the world today, particularly the Middle East. We're going to spend this hour talking about it from two different perspectives. We're going to start off with a Buckmaster Show regular, the Buckmaster Show financial planning expert, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Ben. It's been just a couple of weeks and we had a show together. So, after 20 years not seeing you sometimes, you know, for months at a time, it's been a couple of weeks.
When your scars healed up nicely.
They did. I'm
Shelley, top of mind for me this morning, and you know, we've got a whole list of stuff we want to talk about here in the next two segments, but top of mind for me is what's happening in the Middle East and hopefully what will not happen in the Middle East is maybe a better way to put it. But oil prices, that's something that affects all of us, particularly here in southern Arizona, where we're just, you know, we're what, Tucson's 500 square miles, whatever it is. I mean, people are getting in their cars and driving quite a bit. Where do we stand, and what are your forecasts as long as this thing with Israel gets resolved without anybody else jumping in?
Oh, okay. So right now we have crude prices on average at, you know, about $87 a barrel. That's down from a couple of weeks ago when prices were at 90. OPEC has been using crises around the world, especially the Ukraine war, to raise the price of crude. And in the territories where OPEC has members, there's a lot of concern about what's the future going to be of carbon-based fuels over time. And most of these countries, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Iran, etc., are investing huge amounts of money in, figuring out how to get off of oil as their total dependency. Now, that said, the oil producers, including the United States, understand that the amount of oil that we produce and use over the next 20 years is probably going to level off at some point during, say, the 2030s, maybe the late 2030s, and then 10 years later begin to decline.
Driven by demand or the lack
driven
thereof.
By the lack of demand. I mean, right. Whether we like it or not, whether we support infrastructure changes that are intended to reduce the use of fossil fuels, the fact is we are moving in that direction as alternative fuel sources become more economical and more widely dispersed around the world. So that's just going to be a fact of life. As a result, what the oil producers are doing is trying to get as much, squeeze as much profit as they can while they can.
Sure.
Don't blame them for doing that.
In reviewing your show notes this morning, Shelley, I kind of compared what you said in here to, because I didn't realize this, that I compare it to when I was working with the copper mines. You know, there's no shortage of copper
right. In
North America. What there is a shortage of is smelters. I think there maybe is only two or three operating smelters in North America anymore. And so it's being had to ship overseas to be smelted. You stated this morning that it's not, we've got plenty of oil under the ground, but we've got a refinery problem.
We do. So last year and so far this year, the U.S. is pumping more oil out of the ground, and gas, by the way, natural gas, than ever before. People who say, the Biden administration is trying to restrict oil companies from drilling on their leases. Right now, there are so many awarded leases that are sitting idle. Number one, because we're already pumping as much as we can and exporting fossil fuels. But as you say, what we have right now are the refineries. Our capacity is full. And it is very difficult to get oil companies at this point to invest in new refining capacity because they know, it takes 5, 6, 7 years to do the building. And by that time, oil prices will have leveled off. And so it's just not a good business decision. And so what we're doing is we're moving crude, literally around the world to find capacity to refine the stuff.
And I'm good luck, frankly, in this regulatory environment, good luck getting a refinery permitted anyway.
I can't comment on that. There are the places where refineries are normally friendly to the petroleum industry. I don't think that's a huge problem. The fact is, since the applications are not, forthwith, we don't know.
Right.
But you go to Beaumont, Texas, and you tell, Governor Abbott you want to build a refinery, come on down.
As you even threw the accent in that. It's very good, Shelley. Impacting our daily lives, obviously it takes more on the credit card or debit card to fill your tank up than it did just a couple of years ago. I had heard someone on the radio, I can't remember who it was, Shelley was talking, or maybe it was an editorial, talking about, if things really do go sideways in the Middle East, we might be looking at $150, $200 a barrel.
We've been there.
Which would be just, I mean, in this economic climate would be devastating to a lot of families out there, I suspect.
Clearly, we are so dependent, especially in a state like Arizona, on personal transportation, that to have the price of gasoline go up to $5, $6 a gallon, and I can remember when we were there, would be devastating to a lot of families. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't, cross my fingers, I don't believe that even if this war in, Gaza and Israel expands a bit to some other interested parties surrounding Israel, those are not the oil producers. Now, if it expands to Iran, that'd be a different story. But I don't see this crisis affecting oil prices directly for the time being. If, on the other hand, it becomes politically feasible or advantageous for OPEC members to start using the price of oil as a way of squeezing United States and Israeli policy, or even NATO policy, then it's a different story. But I don't think we're anywhere near there yet.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the data you shared with me, and I get really confused. Is inflation up? Is it down? Are we, are salary increases keeping up with inflation? And some of the numbers you shared were really interesting. I don't think I've seen them compared quite that way, Shelley. And I actually felt a little bit better.
Well, I'm glad you did. The information that we get from our news bubbles, tends to, favor the politics of who's sponsoring the news bubbles. So you have to do some research. Inflation in the immediate aftermath of the pandemic had risen to about 7%. It hadn't been that high since the 1970s and very early in the 1980s. My first mortgage was a 12.5% mortgage, and that was considered pretty routine. So the economy can stand that kind of inflation, but you got to get there gradually, and we don't ever want to get there again. Mm-hmm. From 7% over the past year, inflation has come down to about 3.7, 3.8, 3.5, depending upon which numbers you use. But they're all within a couple of tenths of each other. And that depends on whether it's the inflation number that uses fuel and housing costs as part of it or doesn't.
Let me interrupt there. Why would you not?
Okay.
I mean, there's not very many of us can not
because
have a roof or put gas
true.
In our tank.
But those are very volatile numbers. And when you're making policy, long-term policy, for instance, like the Fed does, you don't want to have a lot of volatility that might not, be pertinent for more than a month or two. So the Fed's numbers they don't use fuel and housing costs, et cetera, for a couple of reasons. One is because they're volatile. Two, because the Fed's one weapon against inflation is interest rates. And when they raise interest rates, guess what goes up?
Right.
Housing
right.
costs.
Right.
Because mortgages go up. So the Fed doesn't want to use a number that they literally can control.
I want to come back after the break and talk more about this, but do you think is the Fed done for a while?
I hope so. One of the things the Fed has done as a kind of unintended consequence is we've seen that the cost of borrowing has gone up and bond yields have gone up. So the Fed raising interest rates has that effect. So with bond yields up right now, and we'll talk about demand for bonds, the Fed really doesn't need to, because what it would do would be to raise interest rates, and the market's doing that for the Fed automatically. Ask me that question on the other end of the break.
Yeah, I found it interesting in my day job. I'm finding now, or I'm hearing about some of the home builders are actually buying down the mortgages now to try and get people involved. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in here on the Buckmaster Show. We're talking with financial planner Shelley Fishman. If you'd like to interact, give us a call on the Rincon Ventures Property Management Real Estate Line, 790-2040. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill. Hey, listen, this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery. They're on the corner of northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Not only just great Danish, but they're also open for breakfast and lunch from 6:30 to 2 p.m. Of course, you can always treat yourself to their mouthwatering pastries, including the famous Danish Kringle. You can visit monasdanishbakery.com or also visit thebuckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We're talking with Buckmaster Show financial planner Shelley Fishman. Shelley, before we took the break, I was expressing my confusion about the state of things in our financial markets and our world today. We're talking about the Fed, so you think that they're gonna stop, but what would it take for them to start going back again, just reducing interest rates?
Well, their target for inflation is 2%. We're at around 3.5% by their measurements, and it was flat the past month or so. So that flatness was alarming to the equity markets because they said, oh, gosh, the Fed's going to start raising interest rates again. And so you saw 2 weeks ago and through most of September, the markets just came down. The effect on interest rates and on bond costs, in other words, borrowing costs, mm-hmm. of what has happened because there is less of a demand right now because China has stopped buying American debt and the Fed has stopped buying American debt. So demand is down. When demand is down, prices have to, you know, go down for bonds. That means that returns go up. So bond returns have gone up, and that has the effect, the same effect as when the Fed raises interest rates. So I've got my fingers crossed and hope that what the Fed does, what Mr. Powell does, is take credit for the best of all worlds. I'm not going to change anything because we already changed it enough and it's doing what we want it to do.
Fair enough. Hey, Matt called us on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management Live line. Matt, what's your question or comment for Shelley?
Shelley, just, I don't know if you covered it, but I was just curious if you had any thoughts about two things. One, Jamie Dimon's statement about this being the most dangerous time that he has seen in years, worldwide, geopolitically, and blah, blah, blah. And the second thing is, any comment on the Biden administration also engaging with the Venezuelans, I think it is, basically allow them to produce more or get more oil on the market? And actually, that is a two-part thing, because part of it might be because of the crisis of people crossing the border from Venezuela. And then the other thing is it adds to the oil supply, which the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is also desperately low.
Hey, Matt, listen real quick. You're coming across kind of spotty there on your signal. So if you don't mind, Shelley's going to go ahead and just answer that with you off the air. Thanks for calling the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks, Matt. Good to hear your voice, actually. It's been a while. So Jamie Dimon is commenting on what we all, I think, are very concerned about, which is that the world seems to be going to heck in a handbasket. I mean, we've got two major wars going on. We've got climate change that is creating huge problems with agriculture, and the ability of, especially below the equator, south of the equator, countries to feed their own people. I mean, this is, when you think about it, the beginnings of what could be just a horrible problem with people, millions and millions of people, you know, trying to leave where they are because where they are is no longer livable. So that, and with the exception of Poland over the weekend, which seemed to have gotten it right, you have more countries flirting with, high-powered individuals who want to take small d democracy and reduce its power to kind of run their countries, and you know, when that happens, you know history will tell you that you're going to get fascist and communist types of regimes that, you know, that just take away the power of the people to make decisions on their own. I think that's what Jamie Dimon was talking about. Now, every time somebody burps, you know, in the world, it has economic consequences. And he's right about that. It has been a very difficult time to watch.
Well, and that's something else that I don't know. I mean, you know, interest rates, some of the financial vehicles, for lack of a better term, are relatively stable, are relatively predictable. You can it's math and science. The other things, though, like with what's happening in Congress right now, I mean, to what extent does that send a ripple effect through the stock markets and other folks saying, hey, what?
Clearly the stock markets hate uncertainty.
Sure.
And the idea that we're a couple of weeks away from another government shutdown, we don't have a Speaker of the House. There was a vote today, and Mr. Jordan did not get what he needed. So when you have a government in Washington and in other places around the world that are ineffectual in making policy and sticking with that policy, that's going to have economic consequences. The other part of Matt's question, very interesting, about the Biden administration supporting the country of Venezuela in producing more oil and selling that oil on world markets. You know, that's a function of the secondary function is maybe to slow down immigration out of Venezuela. But a more important thing here is demand for oil, as we discussed earlier, is still growing. You know, with all the wind farms and all the solar and all of that, it is not going to go away anytime soon, and it's probably going to take a couple of decades before it appreciably declines. And, you know, pulling resource out of the ground, it's a finite resource, and though you can get more and more of it through secondary and tertiary recovery, it costs more to do that. So making sure that demand is met over the next decade or two is simply a wise thing to do.
Let's talk real quick. We've got just a few minutes left. I'm getting up there in age. I'm not a spring chicken anymore like you, Shelley, or John, but healthcare costs, how bad is it? What can be done to get that under control, or we just leave it to the market?
Okay, so it depends on who you are.
Okay.
If you've got good insurance and a good employer and you're, you know, relatively healthy, you live in a country with arguably the best health care in the world. If, on the other hand, you don't have that kind of insurance, you live in a country with the most expensive health care. You live in an industrialized country with the most expensive health care in the industrialized world. We are spending 19% of GDP on health care. Our closest competitors, and I call them competitors because, you know, we do compete with them for resources and for markets, et cetera, and that would be the industrialized, you know, countries of Europe and Asia. Mm-hmm. They spend about 11% of their GDP on health care. They get better outcomes, by the way, than we do.
Why?
Well, I mean, part of the reason is because their health care is, let's call it, socialized. They have universal health care that is paid for by taxation, and because it just makes sense to do it, they spend a great deal of their resource on prevention. So, you know, you walk around France or Italy or Spain I was in Singapore a couple of years ago. There's not very many fat people around. Now, you know, I'm sorry. If you want to be fat, be fat. But there's a price to pay in healthcare for being obese, having good regulations about smoking. And so, for instance, there was just a study published in the Washington Post. They took a look at three counties, one in New York, one right next to it in Ohio, and then another one right next to it in rural Ohio. Three counties that have fairly similar populations. And based upon their regulations on smoking and on other health care, the life expectancy in the lowest was 2 years lower than in the highest. The highest was in New York.
Hmm.
So there are prices that you pay for health care that does not do the things you want it to. Now, you want to call that death panels? Fine, call it what you like. But the answer to your question is we're spending about 7 or 8% more of GDP on health care than we need to. As a result, we don't have money for infrastructure, we don't have money for, you know, paying people's education, schools,
yeah,
et cetera. Yeah. And we keep on lowering taxes. you know, and giving the money that we do gain in growth from GDP to the top 10%. I mean, there are policy, these are self-inflicted wounds, Ben. Mm. And at some point, we either fix these things or we are going to, you know, fall out of being the top economy in the world.
Well, I was feeling good until you brought that up.
These are fixable problems. You know, when you've got a self-inflicted wound, you can stop shooting yourself.
Right, right. Well, I never thought about the general health of Americans. That's a very good point, too. Are we just...
We have gone from second or third to like 20th in the world in terms of overall. And again, you and I probably are fine. But, you know, if you fall in that lower half of the median or mean... you don't have that kind of health care. You stay away from doctors when you can. You're not doing preventive things.
Yeah.
If you live in a food, you know, desert, you're eating junk.
Yeah.
Those things have an effect on lifespan.
Shelley Fishman, thanks so much for coming on and enlightening me here on the Buckmaster Show. I always appreciate your
good
insights.
To see you.
And I am going to have a salad for lunch today after talking to you instead of a burger. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Don't forget, you can find podcasts while they show buckmastershow.com. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We're broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. Speaking of which, you know, Laura and I are looking about our fall planting, refreshing kind of our blooms, maybe even putting a good winter garden. You definitely need to do what we do and visit Green Things. They're on 13 acres, everything you need, and more importantly, friendly experts there willing to give you great advice. They're on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park. While you're there, check out all the beautiful imported furniture and art at Socolo Village. You can learn more on the web at greenthings.com or socolovillage.com. The Buckmaster Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Feel free to give us a call, 790-2040. Up next on the Buckmaster Show, we're very pleased to have joining us on the Live Line, James Gagliano. James is a West Point graduate. He served with the storied 10th Mountain Division. Also, 25 years with the FBI, including assignment to their elite counterterrorism unit, the Hostage Rescue Team. He's regularly called upon by national media on issues of counterterrorism and law enforcement. Jimmy, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Wow, BBG, it's been a long time, but it's great to join you on the show. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope I can be a little informal and just call you Jimmy because you and I go way back from that time you arrested me. Oh, no, never mind. That's a different story.
We do go a long way back, but I'm here to say you've never been arrested, as far as I know.
Yes, exactly. Listen, I'm a big believer and fan of what you do and your expertise, Jimmy, so I wanted to have you on to maybe enlighten us a little bit about what's happening in the Middle East. You're no stranger to terrorism. If I recall correctly, you were assigned to help with the investigation of the USS Cole bombing, but for a dental appointment, you might have been a victim on 9/11. So you've seen it in the face, up close and personal.
Yeah, it is kind of hard to believe, but as you mentioned, 25 years in the FBI, I began in 1991, and my first exposure to terrorism, I was a young brick agent on an organized crime squad, you know, chasing after John Gotti and his cronies. And there was an attack at the World Trade Center in February of 1993. And that was really my first exposure. I was not at the building that day when it happened, but that afternoon I was and saw the cavernous hole down there and obviously the investigation that the FBI pursued after that. And then, yeah, December of 2000, it's hard to believe it's been that long, but the attack in the port of Aden, Yemen, against the USS Cole and the sailors that were killed there, I responded with the FBI's Hostage Rescue Team and spent a number of months in Yemen. And then, you know, to your point again, 9/11, and yeah, I would have been in Lower Manhattan that morning when the planes hit. I got there about an hour after the second one hit and right before the South Tower came down. Timing is everything, I guess. But, yeah, Ben, I've been up close and personal and seen these up close. And I can't imagine what the state of Israel and Israelis are dealing with in the Middle East. I mean, being surrounded as they are by nations that not all of them, but some of them are hostile to them and would love to see the annihilation of the state. I can't even imagine what the folks over there in Gaza and in Israel are dealing with on a daily basis. We kind of take for granted our protections, our freedoms, our securities here, Ben. But as you well know, it's a different story overseas, and especially in the Middle East.
Jim, have you traveled through Israel?
Israel is one of the few countries, and I'm saddened to say this. It's a place I'd love to go to, but I have not been to. I've been to Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Iraq, you know, Yemen, Oman. But Israel is a place I've never been to. It's beautiful, and I'd love to travel there one day, but I've never actually set foot on Israeli soil.
You know, Jimmy, I'm by no means an expert like you are, but kind of drawing on your military background, I'm thinking, I mean, from a purely tactical situation, Hamas is surrounded on the north and east by Israel. They've got their backs to the Mediterranean Sea on the west, and they've got a closed border with Egypt to the south. What on earth were these guys thinking? Or am I making the mistake of applying average human sense to barbarians?
Yeah, really, first of all, I don't want to accuse the Israeli intelligence apparatus as having a failure, but they are some of the best in the world at ferreting out, you know, nuggets of intelligence and keeping their citizens safe. And for this to happen, I mean, absolutely, I think it shocks the senses that a plan that was so crudely operated and implemented caught them off guard. But here we have an argument in the United States all the time about the Second Amendment and whether or not it should be in place or not, or whether or not it should be abridged or changed. And look at this. The people that were attacked by these animals, these savages, and that's what they were. And I'm talking not about the Palestinian people. I'm talking about right. the Hamas terrorists, what they did to so brutally murder, rape, kill, behead babies, women, children. It just goes to show so many of the people there were defenseless. And look, the Israeli military is really one of the best militaries in the world. It's a country of 9 million people. They've only been around since 1948, but their technology, their intelligence apparatus, their ability on air, land, or sea to defend their nation, and unfortunately they're in a place where their neighboring countries are not friendly to them. The Israelis are excellent at what they do. In this instance, though, it is so shocking and so surprising to see that Hamas, with paragliders and crude rockets and crude weapons, were able to wreak the havoc that they do. But you know what? You let your guard down for a second. I think it was Samuel Morse that said it best, BBG, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And I think the Israeli politicians, the Israeli military and the entire military apparatus there is going to be doing a lot of soul searching after this to figure out what went wrong.
Jimmy, it's still a very dynamic situation over there, and I want to echo what you say. In fact, every night I pray for both the Israelis and the Palestinians, because that's there's some innocent people that are stuck between the hammer and the anvil over there. And have you, talking to other experts or just from your own observations, got a sense of what the purpose, what was the mission here? Was it to secure hostages? Was it a hope to maybe inspire other folks to jump in and start a multi-front war against Israel? Or what is your take on that, Jimmy?
I think the answer to what you just asked on many fronts is yes to all of that. Ben, you got to go back to the definition of terrorism. It's violence or intimidation in pursuit of political or social justice ends or aims. And in this instance, we know, look, this isn't a new conflict. I mean, this has been going on for thousands of years. In the United States, we're such a young country, and we can't even fathom, I mean, anything beyond 250 years, and much less thousands of years. This is a conflict that has been going on for time immemorial. I think a big piece of this is obviously the hatred that the terrorists, and that's what they are. They're terrorists. I know that places like the, you know, New York Times and other, you know, sympathetic outlets want to refer to them as militants or gunmen. They're terrorists. What they did to women and children and innocents, they are barbaric. And Israel has to respond, and they're doing that now. Now, Israel deals by a separate set of rules, and yes, and you pointed it out correctly, Ben, we're praying for the Israelis. We're also praying for the innocent Palestinians, because Hamas, and I believe, don't quote me in this, but I believe they are the elected government. I think going back to like 2006, there's not been a free election in Palestine since then, but they are the elected government, the ruling government there. But not every Palestinian adheres to Hamas and their tactics and their politics. But they're going to continue to do this. Their goal, their stated goal, is the annihilation, the complete obliteration of the state of Israel. And Israel has to respond in kind. And unfortunately, and it's a product of war as we know it, there will be collateral damage. But they're doing everything, from what I can see and from what the experts and the military folks are saying, they're doing everything they can to protect innocent life. But make no doubt, you know, this is a war, and there are going to be casualties, Ben, and I hate to think about it, but I have a feeling it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
Well, and Jimmy, I think also adding to the fog of war and just the mess over there, I mean, Gaza is one of the most densely populated places on the planet. That's a very difficult place to prosecute a war with, you know, mitigating civilian casualties. So I tell you, based on your expertise with hostage rescue and anti-terrorism, Jimmy, when we come back, I want to talk, maybe get your take on what the challenges are that the Israelis face in trying to go in and get out, I don't know, 150, 200, whatever the number is now. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia, here on sitting in for Bill on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back with more from James Gagliano after these messages. Stick around.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill in the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. Hey, you know, if you haven't noticed, fall is in the air and it's time for the leaves to change. If you'd like to really see literally dramatic leaves, plan a visit to Silver City. It's a small town with big culture and surrounded by 3.3 million beautiful acres of the Gila National Forest. You can plan a weekend getaway. It's just a short three-hour drive from Tucson. Check out all the things to see and do and begin planning your getaway at southwestnewmexico.org. If you'd like to interact with us, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're talking with James Gagliano. James is a West Point graduate, 25 years with the FBI, including their elite counterterrorism unit, the hostage rescue team. Jimmy, I'm trying to picture in my mind's eye. I think I literally saw something this morning where they estimate the number of hostages is now close to 200. In the environment that you're working with in Gaza there with all these civilians and bombed out structures in these tunnels, what kind of challenge are the Israelis going to have to try and get in there
and get these hostages out? And may not be fair, Jimmy, but what would you forecast be the percentage of potential success?
Well, I mean, and I hate to use this trite, overused cliche, but when you talk about a needle in a haystack, so you're searching for hostages that are inside an urban area, densely packed, as you mentioned, urban area, where many of the civilians there are sympathetic to Hamas and their cause. And you're trying to ferret out where the bad guys are. You're trying to find the innocent civilian hostages. And then you're also dealing with the local populace. And you're not sure who's friend or foe, who's, you know, just there because they have to. They have no other options. And who's there and sympathetic to the terrorists. Look, Ben, we've talked about this before. For a successful hostage rescue, you need four different things: speed, surprise, violence of action, and a fail-safe breach. Now, when any of those is altered in any way, you have to ratchet up one of the other ones. If you lose speed, you've got to count on surprise. If you lose surprise, you've got to count on speed, and so on and so forth. The problem here is, again, it's a needle in a haystack. Yeah, I've heard the numbers around 199 or 200 innocent civilian hostages, men, women, and children, including infants, and some American citizens, which makes it even doubly worse. It's going to be a difficult situation. Look, the IDF, the Israeli military and their special forces, obviously Mossad, they're some of the best in the world. But even if you have, you know, a unit that's the best in the world, hostage rescue is a delicate thing. Because why? Because if bad guys, if bad people, if terrorists are willing to die in the act, there is just, it makes it extremely difficult. They're not built like we are. They don't respect human life, and that makes it tough. Is it impossible? No. Should we root for diplomacy first and negotiations? Absolutely. And if not, then I trust that the Israelis, with help from a lot of countries, including the United States, go in and do what they need to do, Ben.
Jimmy, is this a situation where time could be an ally or an enemy as more time ticks past? I mean, Gaza is pretty well buttoned up. I don't see Hamas being able to smuggle these hostages out someplace else, but they've got quite an extensive tunnel network, so I'm not thinking that's maybe not a possibility.
Well, and we haven't mentioned the I word yet, so mm-hmm. Iran. I mean, we know that Iran is financing Hamas and supportive of Hamas and has threatened to get more engaged here in this, what could be a cataclysmic, catastrophic, I don't want to say another world war, but another huge Middle Eastern conflict. And that would complicate things hugely. It's tough to say. I mean, Hamas has made some statements that if the rockets and the attacks in Gaza don't end, and the Israelis have every right to do them, to pursue Hamas, and Hamas does not play by the set of rules that we do, Ben. They're putting weapons caches in mosques. They're putting them in hospitals. They're hiding behind human shields. They're hiding behind innocent civilians. Makes it very difficult. And then they're smart and they're savvy, and they'll use that to the best of their ability to get the world to, provide, to gain sympathy from the world when they show pictures of babies that have been hurt or innocent civilians that have been hurt, because the Israelis are trying to, as Bibi Netanyahu famously said, we're going to end Hamas. And it's important also to remember, it wasn't that long ago, in 1976, the Entebbe raid in Uganda, where an Air France plane had been taken hostage by a group of Palestinians, and the Israelis flew 2,500 miles, as I recall, because I've sat through a number of briefings on it. It was one of the most successful raids ever, and one of the most successful hostage rescues ever. I mean, just the way the Israelis pulled it off, I wouldn't put anything past them. They are good, they are skilled, and they are committed, Ben.
You know, it sounds like, and we've talked about, Israelis have got some of the most high-tech weapons available, but I'm just curious, human intelligence, you cited, Jimmy, is so important. I'm hoping and praying that there may be some Palestinians down there who are fed up, who recognize Hamas for the bloodthirsty bullies that they are, and, you know, might be willing to, pardon me for borrowing a New York phrase, but might be willing to drop a dime on these guys and lead the IDF or whomever to get those hostages out. But my top concern really is what you touched on before, is that some of these hostages being smuggled out of Gaza into Iran, and that makes things a lot more complicated.
I think the most beguiling thing, and you touched on it, the Israelis have an amazing intelligence network in the Middle East, throughout the Middle East, not just in Gaza, not just in Palestinian territory. And for them not to have gotten, I mean, look, you can point the finger at us too and say, how did 9/11 happen with, you know, our intelligence apparatus and the Five Eyes, and the fact that we have a relationship with four other major nations to share intelligence? How could this possibly have happened? So I think we got to kind of, take our foot off the gas for a second and take a pause, because everyone's criticizing Israeli intelligence. Look, intelligence is not a fail-safe pursuit. I mean, you can be as good as you want to be at it, but a lot of times luck plays a factor in it. And to your point, are there sympathetic folks that are anti-Hamas and that are Palestinians and that wish to help the Israelis in this situation? The answer to that is absolutely. How the Israelis did not get wind of this operation, an operation at this level and scale, Ben, your guess is as good as mine.
Well, and I guess we'll have plenty of time to Monday morning quarterback that later on. Jimmy, we've got just a couple of minutes left. I'm curious on your take. We, the United States, just paid $6 billion to get some people out of Iran. I think it was five persons. Now, I guess that checkbook has been closed temporarily. But nonetheless, the Israelis have always just bent over backwards to get their hostages or even the remains of soldiers back. And is this a situation where maybe that's coming back to hurt them?
Well, I think there is a public position that countries like Israel and the United States take and the Western world takes, which is we don't negotiate with terrorists. And that's a great bumper sticker, right? But the reality is that behind the scenes, you're always working, especially on behalf of the families of people that have been taken hostage, innocent civilians, to work to get them, you know, returned. Now, look, you know, if you pay a big ransom, how does that you know, encourage, you know, ISIS or Iran or Russia or China or North Korea to stop taking hostages or stop arresting people on, you know, spurious charges, because there's a benefit to that. And that's part of the geopolitical dance that is played. Look, the $6 billion that you pointed out, you know, money is fungible. And so you can say that it's going to do this, that, or the other, but the bottom line is we know Iran is the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. So to think that releasing, and people are going to argue and say, but Jimmy, it was their money. Yeah, but we know that they sponsor terrorism, and that money has been frozen for decades. And giving that money to them is basically saying to them, go out, figure out how to make a nuclear bomb, and go out and support terrorist organizations like Hezbollah and Hamas. And I think it was a mistake. But I'm sitting here, Ben, and I'm sure there's people at the White House or people in the Situation Room or people in DOD who are looking back and saying, yeah, but you're not here. So I always say these things and then go, but I'm not in the room, and I wasn't there to make the decision, but this is my opinion.
Well, Jimmy, I look at it just like, you know, you worked on some mafia investigations. I mean, if you confiscate a drug lord's yacht, that's our yacht now. You got it through ill-gotten means. I kind of see this money from around the same way. Jimmy, thanks for spending some time with us. I hope to get out to Cornwall soon, and, you know, I spent 10 years at the Chamber of Commerce. Maybe I can cut some ribbons with the mayor.
I'm waiting on you to invite me back to Tucson, because you know I'll be there, BBG.
All right, brother. Please stay safe.
I will. You too.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's another Buckmaster Show in the can. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for calling. Matt, thanks for joining us. You can join or look at all the archived episodes at buckmastershow.com. This is Ben Bueller-Garcia sitting in for Bill. I'll be back again tomorrow. I look forward to chatting with you then. Stay safe.